This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Here's a question for women. When you make a suggestion at work, do you often preface it with a disclaimer? Like, you've probably already thought of this, but... Or, I don't know if this'll work, but... According to Deborah Tannen, that's typical of women who like to downplay their authority, soften their criticisms, and seek consensus. But men often misunderstand this woman talk and interpret it as insecurity or discomfort with authority. Tannen says the differences between the conversational styles of men and women lead to constant misunderstandings at work. She analyzes why in her new book, Talking from 9 to 5. Tannen is a linguist who also explored the differences between how men and women speak in her best-selling book, You Just Don't Understand. She opens her new book with an example of one typical misunderstanding at work. Donald has just submitted a woefully inadequate report to his supervisor, Amy, and she has to tell him the report has to be redone.
In delivering the criticism, Amy thought the appropriate thing to do was start with praise, tell him everything that was good about it. And she was quite pleased with how it had gone because he seemed to take the criticism quite well. But then when she got the revision, he hadn't made any of the changes that she thought were necessary. When she confronted him about this, he said, but you told me it was fine. So he heard the praise as the main point. To her, the praise was the preamble to the criticism. And I believe that this results from their different expectations for how that conversation should go. In other words, he obviously expected that if it was basically inadequate, she would have said that up front. And she obviously thought that the best way to give criticism is to start by acknowledging everything that was good. I could assume that if their roles were reversed, she might be offended by someone who got right to the point and tore something apart without acknowledging what was good. And another thing about this that's very crucial is that it's quite common for ways of speaking that are quite common among women to take the other person's reaction into account. In other words, spend some time saving face for the other person. And so starting that criticism with praise is a way of saving face for him. Because he didn't expect it to come in this way, though, he missed the point.
Your point, I think, is that both styles are equally valid, but if you have people using different communication styles, they're always going to misunderstand each other.
Right, because conversation is fundamentally a ritual. In other words, we don't mean what we say literally any more than when you call somebody on the phone and ask, is Mary there? You don't expect them to say yes and keep holding the phone, although children sometimes do that because they haven't learned the ritual. When we talk at work, have conversations, we talk in ways that seem self-evidently the way to speak. But if you talk to someone who doesn't share the ritual, then they're likely to interpret it literally. And that's where talk at work is sometimes more challenging to many women than to men, because so many of the conversational rituals that many women use take a one-down position or save face for the other person and therefore puts you in a somewhat vulnerable position. But we don't mean it literally. We expect the other person to realize it's just a ritual and bring us back up. An example is the one that comes up so often where women might say, I'm sorry. And it doesn't mean an apology. It means, I'm sorry that happened. For example, the teacher who had to send a difficult student to the principal and then later met the principal in the hall and learned that he had suspended the student and said, oh, I'm sorry. And he said, well, don't apologize. It's not your fault.
Well, you have a good I'm sorry story that you tell in the book, and this is something that actually happened to you. There was a journalist in your class observing the class when you used the word I'm sorry, and she interpreted it, or he interpreted it, differently than you'd intended. Tell us the story.
Right. Well, a journalist had turned up at a class that I teach unannounced and told me that she had tried to call me on the phone but hadn't reached me, and she wanted to sit into my class to observe. Now, I have a policy that I never allow people to observe because so many people want to, and it's really not fair to the students since I always teach my class as seminars. But confronted with someone who had gone out of her way to get there, I went ahead and let her in, which right away I think was probably accommodating more to her than perhaps I should have. In the class, some students had made some errors in what they had done for their assignments. And to save face for them, I said something like, well, maybe I wasn't clear in giving my instructions, but this is what you really were supposed to do. Now, I knew that I had been clear in the instructions, and most of the students knew. But this was a ritual way of not embarrassing the ones who had done the assignment wrong publicly. But the journalist used this in her article and said something like, here's this expert in communication. She can't even give clear instructions to her own students. And it just seemed to me typical of so many things I observed in my own research in the workplace, where women are less likely to be monitoring their way of speaking to make sure that they don't talk in a way that could make them look bad. They will often say things that could make them look bad, but they know they don't mean it literally, and they're depending on other people to realize that this is just a ritual.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Deborah Tannen, and she has a new book about gender misunderstandings in the workplace, and it's called Talking from 9 to 5. Do you think women are sometimes misunderstood when they're indirect in using their authority, and that they're interpreted as being insecure or unable to manage, and are therefore penalized?
Yes. I think women are seen as insecure and lacking in confidence more often than they really are. And on the other side, I think men are often seen as arrogant when they're simply speaking in ways that they have learned to speak in their growing up with boys, because boys are very hard on boys who leave themselves vulnerable in any way. And so they learn that they ought to talk in ways that create their status and cover up any weaknesses. Women, on the other hand, have grown up as girls, where the girls will be very hard on another girl who tells others what to do in too obvious a way. She'll be called bossy. Or if she talks about what she's good at in too obvious a way, they'll say she's stuck up or she really thinks she's something. So they learn that they should downplay what they're good at and just depend on other people to see that and appreciate it. Unfortunately, in the workplace, we have to worry not only about getting the work done, but about getting credit for what we do. And I observed in many situations where women were speaking in ways that were very good for getting the work done, but not as successful at getting credit for what they've done if they're talking to people who don't understand that ritual.
Well, this leads into another problem you point out, which is that you've found that women spend less time promoting themselves.
Yes, and this is a good time to make clear that I don't claim that all women and men talk the same way. So there are a lot of ethnic differences, regional differences that I talk about as well. But styles that are common among women often avoid anything that calls attention to oneself in an obvious way. So, for example, one woman I observed was saying we to talk about something that I knew she had done herself. And when I asked her why she was saying we instead of I, she said, well, it would sound too self-promoting if I said I. Now, ideally, and I think in many situations, that's just fine because everybody was there and they knew who did what. But in a situation where you have to get credit not only from your immediate peers, but also from your boss and your boss's boss, they may not have been there to see who did what. I also heard a man, I'm thinking of one example, who was saying we about something that had come out of his team, but actually he had not done. And teamwork is very tricky this way. It's a style of work that many women feel comfortable in, that is being part of a group effort. But promotions and raises are not handed out on the team level. They're handed out to individuals. And so the challenge then is to communicate beyond the team who did what. And often the people who get credit for that are the ones who are either talking about it to the boss or even to the boss's boss, and they may be the ones who somehow get credit for what that team did.
Linguist Deborah Tannen is my guest. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is linguist Deborah Tannen. Her new book, Talking from 9 to 5, is about how differences between men and women's conversational styles cause misunderstandings at work. Have you found that women speak differently to other women on the job than they speak to other men?
Yes and no. I think women, when I observed women in groups of meetings that were just women, there were some ways they were talking differently. Interestingly, there was more laughter. There was more overlap. In other words, they talked along quite a bit, one talking along with the other, not as an interruption, but as a sign of enthusiasm. They mixed talk about work with talk about personal things, jokes about diet, jokes about clothing. When I observed women talking with men in meetings, I could see them trying to do some of the same things, and it didn't always work as well. So I observed meetings where a woman was laughing, and the man she was talking to was not laughing along with her. And it left her, again, in a kind of vulnerable position where it almost looked like she was putting herself down because she was the only one laughing. Whereas when she laughed and the woman she was talking to laughed, then it didn't. It was not self-deprecating. So again, this is a pattern where if you try to do something in a ritual way and it's not understood ritually, it can put you in that one-down position.
Well, so how do you think women's style sometimes can affect them during salary negotiations and title negotiations?
Well, the same things can come into play. One man told me that it was not unusual for women to come to him and say, I would like a raise because so-and-so is doing similar work and he makes more than me. Or I would like a raise because I really need it. My family is having these problems and we need more money. Both of these, he explained, were weak bargaining positions because he could point to someone who was making less money. So that took care of the first one. And whether she needs it is irrelevant to the company. He felt that it would be much more effective to come in and say, I want a raise because I am doing this job. This is effective and this is helping the company in this way. And again, many women might resist doing that because it would seem self-promoting.
Are you making the argument that women or men need to change?
I don't say that anyone, women or men, needs to change. I don't say anyone, women or men, should never change. I see my role as making people aware of how conversation, how ways of talking, how language is a force in your life, so that each individual has the power and the control to decide whether something about their way of talking may be having an influence in their work lives that they're not happy with, and in that situation, whether they might want to try talking differently. It's especially tricky for women, though, because if we talk in ways that are associated with men or expected of men, we may get a very different reaction than a man talking the same way would get. It's interesting. One woman told me that she was accused by her boss of being not soft enough, not approachable enough. And she told me that she solved this problem. Now everything's fine. And I asked her for an example of how she had changed. And the example she gave me was that she had started saying, I'm sorry, more. And I like that example because it's so easy to hear the kind of thing I said and conclude that I must be telling women they should never say I'm sorry. And that's not my point at all. It's to be aware of how ways of speaking could be affecting our interactions. So in some situations, I think women might want to stop saying I'm sorry if they feel they're not being appreciated and they're the only one saying I'm sorry and they realize that they're being taken literally. In other cases, I think men might benefit or some women might benefit from saying I'm sorry more often. It's something that can be very disarming to other people and make them much more willing to admit their fault and to accommodate, which I think is the spirit in which many women say, I'm sorry. It often is a way of making the other person more comfortable admitting their part in something.
Now, you've been on an interview tour, so you're not dealing with workplace language, but every day you're meeting people from the press, radio, television, newspapers, who have different styles of communicating. And I'm wondering if any of the issues that you write about in your book 9 to 5 have come into play in how you are misunderstood or misunderstood by the journalists who you talk with.
Yes, I'll tell you a serious one and a frivolous one. The frivolous one has come up twice now. I've approached a radio station and announced to the receptionist, I'm supposed to be on such and such a show. And twice now, the person I said it to, and in both cases they were men, said to me, well, are you gone or not? Don't you know? And both times I was kind of annoyed because obviously I had said something that was just a way of speaking. I didn't mean it literally. But I decided that I was just going to stop saying it that way because I don't like being put down by the answer. And so when I came in today, I said, I'm a guest on Fresh Air. That's the frivolous one because I don't think it had tremendous consequences. But I have learned in having interviews with journalists that it's not unusual at all for men journalists to take an approach that's somewhat provocative. In other words, they ask questions that are designed to kind of put my back up a bit, with the hope that that will get a more interesting response from me. And in the past, I would get really put off by that and would kind of dig in my heels and get ready for a really nasty article. And I've just learned that many people who do that are quite well-intentioned, and it's just their way of getting an interesting interview, and I just try to keep my cool and not be offended by it. At the same time, I've had to learn to be cautious of interviewers, and often this is women, who come on as my friend, are quite self-revealing about themselves in order to encourage me to be self-revealing and to talk in ways that are more unguarded. So I think these are two opposite and parallel ways of getting the subject to be unguarded. And I've learned that I have to not let my guard down in that sense and not say anything that I wouldn't feel comfortable seeing in print.
Linguist Deborah Tannen, her new book is called Talking from 9 to 5. This is Fresh Air.